We are indeed blessed to be able to assemble ourselves together on this Lord's Day and to worship Him, and I appreciate the presence of each and every one, the manner in which we've conducted ourselves and engaged in this hour of worship thus far. If you're visiting with us, you are an honored guest, and we're so thankful that you've come our way. We encourage you to come back and be with us again the next time that you have the opportunity. But I want to let you know that the sermon that I'm going to preach this morning is an in-house sermon. It's a sermon that I have put together for the benefit of the members of this congregation. I trust that those who are visiting will get some good from it as well. But if you're a member here, I hope especially I've got your attention. I wanted to preach on this last Sunday morning, but with the power outage, I moved it to this Lord's Day morning. I want to talk about some trends here at the Knollwood Church of Christ. The word trend is defined as the general direction in which something is developing or changing. So the word trend conveys to us or gives us the idea of a change that is taking place or development that is taking place. It can be either positive or it could be negative. Trends could be either one, but that's what I'm talking about. My family and I have been here almost 4.5 years, and during this time we've been able to see some changes that have taken place, some for the good and some for the bad, that I want to talk about and I want to address for a few moments this morning. But this sermon is not just coming from me, that is not just coming from a desire that I have to talk about things that I have seen. But another, call it a trend if you will, that I've noticed over the past several months is the number of members who have come to me and expressed appreciation about things that they see that are good, but also have expressed concern to me about a number of things. And so the trends I'm talking about is not just something that I'm seeing, but it's something that a number of members here are seeing. And for those who would come and talk to me or the elders or someone else about it, there are probably others who see the same things but are not voicing any joy or concern out loud to others. I want to talk about this. Looking at trends, that is, looking at ourselves as a congregation, is a scriptural thing for us to do. In the book of 2 Corinthians, chapter 13 and verse 5, the Apostle Paul draws this epistle to a close with various admonitions. One of them found here in this verse: examine yourselves as to whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. Do you not know yourselves that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you are disqualified? Test yourself. Examine yourself. We are told in scriptures to take a look at ourselves. Why? Because changes do happen. And oftentimes changes occur so slowly that we don't notice them until we have an occasion to back up and take a look. And then when we back up and purposely examine ourselves, then, something's happened here. Something's gotten better. Something's not as good as it should be. So we're told to examine ourselves individually, and of course, collectively as a congregation. In the book of 1 Corinthians at chapter 11, this is a passage that we go to oftentimes to talk about the Lord's Supper. And of course, in this letter, Paul is correcting it. He's addressing their abuse of the Lord's Supper. They were turning it into a feast, and it was further dividing the congregation there. And so he writes to them, he tells them the proper way that it is to be observed, and then gives some warnings about the matter. He sums it up, begins to sum it up in verse 31. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 31, "For if we would judge ourselves, we would not be judged." Now think about that for just a moment. They were doing this wrong. They were eating and drinking damnation to themselves. And Paul writes to them, tells them, "Yo, if you'll stop and you'll correct this matter now, God won't have to correct it. God won't discipline you. God will not punish you for this." And so here's another principle set forth for us in the Word of God, that if we can look at trends and we can look at things that are not going right and correct them now, then God is pleased with that, and we save ourselves of being judged by Him in the last day. In the book of Revelation, in chapters 2 and 3, Jesus sends letters to seven churches. And as he writes to these seven churches, we see a pattern there in those chapters with those seven letters. When possible, the Lord always commended the things that they were doing right first. If they were doing right, there was one that wasn't. But all the other times, the Lord, when he would address these churches, he would tell them first, here's what you're doing right. And I'm glad that I see this. And then, when necessary, he would move on and address the things that needed to be corrected. And that's the pattern that I want to follow today. I want to take a look first at some trends that I see here that are right. I want us to talk about what's right about the Knollwood Church of Christ, because there's a lot that is. And then I want us to take a look at some things that need to be addressed, some things that need to be changed. Now, I trust that I have your attention, and I hope that you'll receive the following things in the manner in which they are shared with you, and that is in love. But let's take a look at some trends here. Let's start off by looking at some things that are right. We're growing here at Knollwood. If you haven't figured that out, sitting in your pew, we're growing here. We've seen a growth in attendance. When we moved here 4.5 years ago, the average attendance was 100 to 110. Now it's 140 to 150. And it looks like we've got even more than that here this morning. Roger, how many people do we have? 158. So we are growing here. Not only on Sunday mornings, but our afternoon service, the attendance for the afternoon service has grown as well. And on Wednesday, the afternoon class and the evening class as well, we see the attendance is growing. There's always room for improvement. There's some empty spaces here and there. There's always room for improvement in the afternoon and on Wednesday. But by and large, we are blessed with good attendance here. Also, the involvement of members here. Members are getting involved. Members are being doers of the word and not just pew warmers. And we have new teachers. Seems like every quarter we've got someone that's interested in trying it anew, or maybe a teacher that hasn't taught in a long time wants to get back into the rotation. People who are volunteering for things, people showing hospitality. Our last gospel meeting, we had some names on the meal list that I'd never seen on there before, and that's growth, and I was glad to see that. We're having our second vacation Bible school, Lord willing, this summer. That shows that we're growing. There's that need there, but there's a lot of work that's involved in that. And we see a lot of people that are volunteering their time and giving their time and giving their talents to make something like a VBS happen. This year we've got a brand new young couple that's heading it up, that's taking on that task, stepping up to the plate and saying, we'll do that. And we have a youth lectureship that we're planning for later on in the summer. All these things indicate involvement on the part of so many people. The elders see that. We all see that. And so we're thankful for that increased involvement. Our contributions. I've talked about that in a corrective way over the past couple of years. It has improved somewhat. It seems as if we have a surplus at the end of most months now. And so we're grateful for that, that has improved. And that is a sign of growth. We're looking to increase our eldership here. We're in the process of trying to find and appoint additional elders to our eldership. And that's a blessing to have a number of men who can even be considered to serve as elders. There are so many churches today that would give anything to have two men qualified to serve as an elder. Maybe they only have one. Maybe they don't have any at all. But we're at a point where we've got a number of men that we could consider to add to our eldership. Something else that I see that indicates growth on the part of the congregation here is the interaction that we have between one another as members of a congregation here. In Acts chapter 4 and at verse 32, Luke makes this observation concerning the church in Jerusalem. He says, "Now the multitude of those who believed were of one heart and one soul." I don't know how you could say it any better. I don't know how you could better describe a congregation that's any closer than that. They're one heart and one soul, like the Apostle Paul talks of in Colossians chapter 2 and at verse 9, their hearts being knit together in love. And brethren, I see that here at Knollwood. I see a congregation that's made up of people who genuinely care about one another. If you don't think so, come back by the building someday about an hour after services are over and see how many people are still here talking. How many people are enjoying the time together. When services begin, when it's time for services to begin, how many weeks do we have to do like what David did this morning and get up here with a whip and chair and calm everybody down so we can get started? That's a good thing because we enjoy being with one another and we're visiting with one another and we genuinely enjoy one another's company. And that is a blessing. That is a good thing. Not just the time that we spend together here at services, but the time that we spend together with one another outside of services. Not that we would ever have one, but the Knollwood Church of Christ does not need an events coordinator. We as members choose to spend time with one another outside of these services. And we can see evidence of that on social media, on Facebook, and talking with people and hearing of things that are done together as a group with one another. I understand that that's not anything new. Everything I've said under this point, it's not anything new, but I have seen it increase over the last 4 years. And so we're very grateful and very thankful for that. All of these are indications of spiritual growth, that we are growing as a congregation. We've had a lot of baptisms the last few years. Again, I know of congregations that would give anything to have a baptism now and again. And we've had a number of baptisms here. Some of them have been family members. Some of them have been people from the community. So we've had both. But it's exciting to see people committing themselves to Christ and obeying the gospel and know that we are growing in that way as well. If ever there was a congregation that was experiencing a baby boom, it would be us. It would be us, and I love it. I love to travel and to go to other places and talk about what's going on back at Knollwood. And if I don't mention it first, I always get around to it and talking about the children that we have here and how many young children who are here. And I've heard Brother Bud Gentry say one time, it was over a year ago, he said, we've never had this many children here in our Bible classes before. And I tell you, we just keep adding on to it. We keep growing. So we are going through a baby boom here. And we know what the Scripture says about children being a joy and a blessing to parents. But I want to tell you, parents of young children, your children are a joy and a blessing to all of us here. They are. And we're so very grateful and so very thankful for that. It is indeed a blessing to be here during this time. These children are a source of joy to us, but not only are they a source of joy to us, but they are also a source of hope and expectation that this congregation is going to survive another generation. Because we see that generation now going down the hallway to the classes. And that gives us joy, but it also gives us hope. So that's a great trend that we have here. I want to talk about the way that we treat our visitors. The congregation here at Knollwood has several members who do a very good job of seeing and going to and greeting the visitors that we have here and making them feel welcome. I want to tell you, this is so very important. There's a congregation back home close to where I grew up in Arkansas that whenever we go home to see my family, we usually end up worshiping there at least once. That's a congregation of about 130, 150 people. I know a handful of the people there. But you know, when we go there and we're there for Bible class and there for worship services, you know how many people come to us and greet us and tell us that they're glad that we're there? That handful of people that know me. The rest of them act like we're not even there. And that's sad. That's sad because that's a very cold congregation. Now, I mentioned that to the preacher there one time, and he was shocked. He couldn't believe it. I said, that happens every time. Every time we go back. And here's the funny thing. I grew up in that area, and when I became a member of the Lord's church, I had Christians telling me, now listen, when you go up north, the brethren up there are cold. I'm thinking, no, I think you got it wrong. I look at my map, and Ohio is north of Arkansas, a little off to the east. It's north. And there are congregations up here that run circles around that group as far as being friendly to visitors. So we're doing a good... Now, I realize some visitors don't want to be talked to. Some leave right after services. I realize that as we increase in size, there's only so much time, and some people slip through the cracks. I realize that. I acknowledge that. But I want to tell you, we're way ahead. We're way ahead of a lot of congregations in the way we treat our visitors. And brethren, keep that up. That's a good thing. Keep that up. And we need others to learn how to do that. We need to greet our visitors. And how about our singing? In the month of May, aside from assembling here at Knollwood, I met at four other congregations. One in Oklahoma, two in Texas, and then we went somewhere this past Sunday morning. None of them could hold a candle to the singing here at Knollwood. One thing I've noticed is that when I do go away, or my family, when we do go away, we miss the brethren, but we miss the singing. And we can't wait to get back so that we can sit with you and we can sing praises unto God. We're blessed with talented song leaders. We're blessed with members who can sing. Those who arrange the singing night, the song service on the fourth Sunday afternoon of the month, do a great job with that. And so this is something that we are doing that is right. And we're thankful for it. So we've got a lot of good things going for us here at Knollwood. And we're thankful for every one of them. There's a lot of good here. But I want us to take a look at those things that are lacking. I want us to consider for a few moments now some corrections that need to be made. There's much to commend here, but there's also room for improvement. And I want to put all of these under one category, and that is the way we reverence God in our worship. If you would, turn with me to Psalm 89. I want you to read this verse. Psalm 89 and at verse 7. And I want to read it, and I want us all to think about what it's saying and think about what we're doing as we're sitting here this morning assembled to worship God. Psalm 89 and at verse 7 says, God is greatly to be feared in the assembly of the saints, and to be held in reverence by all those around him. I want to go back and I want to read that again, and I want to make sure you get a hold of it. And you understand what the verse is saying, and you can make the application of what you're doing right here and right now. God is greatly to be feared in the assembly of the saints. We're in the assembly of the saints. We're assembled together, and who is here in our presence? God is here in our presence. We're offering praise and worship unto God, sitting upon His throne, and He's to be held in reverence by us as we are assembled together doing so. That's something that the Bible takes seriously. We are to hold Him in reverence. He is to be feared in the assembly. There's a New Testament passage that goes very well with this in the book of Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 28. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably. Think about that. By which we may serve God acceptably. If we can serve God acceptably, brethren, do you not see that we can serve Him unacceptably? That there's an unacceptable manner in which we can assemble and present ourselves before God and offer our worship unto God? Let us make sure that we serve Him acceptably. How? With reverence and godly fear. With reverence, let's take God seriously. Let's give Him the respect and the honor that He deserves as we assemble ourselves together and as we go throughout our worship service. Let's make that our first and foremost priority. A negative trend that is seen by a number of members in this congregation is the casualness that is shown by some in our assemblies. Brethren, this needs to stop. It needs to stop. We need to take a careful look at some areas in which some improvements need to be made in our assemblies. Let's talk for just a moment about tardiness. I know that there's any number of things that can happen to us on any given day. That we wake up and we've got our schedule in our mind and we've got the best of intentions of making it to appointments and making it to places on time. And I know there's some mornings that the car doesn't start. I know there's some mornings that there's a wreck on the road and we can't get there. And I know some mornings we wake up and we find that our ox is in the ditch. That is, we've got something that we've got to take care of that isn't planned. And it makes us late. And we all understand that. I'm talking about habitual tardiness. I'm talking about those who make it a habit to be here late. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33 tells us to seek first the kingdom of God. If God's kingdom is our first priority, then assembling with the saints will be a priority, which means we'll be there on time. We'll do what we have to do. We'll cancel what we have to cancel. We'll get up a little earlier if we have to. Whatever we have to do, we'll make sure that we're in the habit of being there on time. If we are habitually late for something, habitual tardiness shows a lack of respect. It shows a lack of respect for what's taking place, and it also is a lack of respect for others who got there on time and who are in the habit of getting there on time. So this casual attitude of, well, I'll get there, I might be a little bit late, but that'll be okay. No. No, we need to make it a priority, and we need to be here. Also, casual dress. We just read in Psalm 89, verse 7, God is greatly to be feared in the assembly of the saints and to be held in reverence by all those around Him. There is no dress code for the church. I can't find it. If you can find it, show it to me. I can't find it. There is no official dress code. But brethren, we've assembled here this morning to come before the God of all the heavens and the earth. We haven't come here this morning to meet our town mayor. We haven't come here this morning to meet a senator or even the president of the United States. We've come here this morning to be before God. Should we not have our best? I'm not saying you've got to run out and buy a suit and a tie. I'm not saying you've got to run out and buy the newest and best dress. What I'm saying is we need to dress our best and put our best forward. Everything about what we do when we assemble together ought to be our best. And that includes the way that we dress and the way that we present ourselves before one another and before the Lord. Well, now that's just external. And I know what's in my heart. Yes, but what's in your heart is shown by what's external. Fruit is born. And if we instead of being characterized as best, if we are characterized as casual and laid back, what's in our heart? If that's what's always coming out, if that's what's always seen, what's in there? So let's do our best. Again, and I believe the elders would underscore this as well, we're not talking about a dress code. We're simply talking about our best. We're talking about doing our best. We're talking about looking our best. Another thing to consider, there have always been distractions in the worship services. There always have been, and there always will be. But due to technology, there's a relatively new kind of distraction in our services. And that would be our electronic gadgets, be it our smartphones, be it our iPads, be it our tablets, whatever they are. It gives us access to the internet and gives us access to people outside of this assembly. And there are some who access social media and use these devices during worship service. And that's not right, brethren. Before we go any further, I want to clarify both to make sure everyone understands what I'm saying and to make sure those who are older, who might not be so familiar with this new technology, that a lot of individuals, a lot of people here in this building right now use their gadgets, use their smartphones or their tablets as their Bible. And so I'm not saying that it's wrong for you to have your tablet out or it's wrong for you to have a smartphone out. I wouldn't know how to guess, but I'd say there's a lot of people here right now that have an electronic Bible. And so when you see someone holding a gadget, it doesn't mean that they're playing Pac-Man necessarily. They could be reading their Bible. Also, a lot of Bible programs have other helps that are loaded up on that program. Or these things, they can be accessed through the internet. And I've seen brethren come in with their Bible and their concordance underneath their arm. Or one place where I was at, it was their Bible and Johnson's notes, right? Their Bible and Johnson's notes, and they brought it with them all the time, and they'd be looking through Johnson's notes. Well, people do that now on their tablets, and it's happened sometimes in our Bible class. Someone to ask a question about a Greek word or about something or another, and someone will get online on their tablet, will look that up, and will have information to present to the class. After a while, and that's good. I'm not talking about how that is a good use of this technology. We need to realize some brethren take notes on these tablets, to where we used to write on paper with pencil. Now, sometimes brethren are seen typing notes on these tablets, and sometimes brethren have their phones with them, have them handy in case of an emergency. There was the day that whenever an emergency happened, someone had to call the building, and then someone would answer the phone and then go get the person out of the pew and tap on the shoulder and say, well, you got a phone now, or a phone call now, you need to go get it. Now, if there's an emergency, someone can be notified quickly. We understand that. So I want those who have these devices to understand. I recognize that distinction, and I want all of us to understand that there's some good use to these things. But there are some who, during our worship services, log on to social media sites and check out what's going on Facebook during the worship service. Or maybe send a text to somebody who isn't here during our worship services. Now, you're not being spied upon. We haven't put people throughout the assembly to spy on everyone and tell on who's doing this, but I tell you, It's very easy to see by the people sitting behind you what you have up on your device, and it's easy to tell the difference between a Bible program and Facebook or social media, other social media site. Brethren, number one, it's a distraction. It's a distraction to the people who are sitting behind you, who are sitting around you. Number two, not only is it a distraction, it's a discouragement. It's discouraging to know that here's someone claims to be a Christian, and yet they're online checking out this or checking out that. I'll tell you what else it is. In John chapter 4, verse 24, Jesus told that Samaritan woman at the well that God was looking for certain people to worship Him. Verse 23, John 4, 23, but the hour is coming and now is when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship Him. God is spirit, and those who worship Him must worship in spirit and truth. If our worship is going to be acceptable unto God, it must be in spirit. In spirit means from our heart. You're going to have a hard time convincing me that your heart is upon God in heaven when you're online, when you're surfing the internet, when you're sending and getting text during the preaching. Now, if it's just between you and God, only God would know if your mind is off somewhere else. Now, God knows, don't get me wrong, God knows if you're not focused upon what's happening here. I want to tell you, when you get out your device and you start logging on the internet, everyone knows. Everyone knows that there's somewhere else that you would rather be right now. Now, you've gotten bored with the sermon. Something else has happened to occupy your time, and you'd just soon be gone. Amos had to address that. In Amos chapter 8 and verse 5, God speaks through Amos and says, here's what I hear the people of Israel saying, when will the new moon be passed that we may sell grain and the Sabbath that we may trade wheat? When can we get out of here? How soon can I get? What's going on out in the real world? I want to get out of here.
and go do that. God sees that. That's irreverent. That's disrespectful to God and to the people who are sitting around you. I realize there's a good use for these devices. But wherever there's a good use, Satan always makes sure there's an opportunity to sin. Overcome that temptation. If you can't, dust off your old paper Bible and leave your cell phone and device out in the car. If that's what you need to do to overcome this. So that's a negative trend. And it needs to be corrected. It needs to stop. There's one more that I want to look at. And that is our children. We've already said that our children are one of the greatest joys that we have here at Knollwood. And I stand by that. But we realize that with great joy and great blessings also come great responsibilities. And the Bible teaches that the parents of these children have great responsibilities to bring up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And let me say this, everyone who has raised children here understands this and knows the burden, knows very well the burden of that responsibility and just how challenging it can be to go through a stage of life in which you are teaching and training young children. A good number of these individuals who have raised their children have expressed concern to the elders, to myself, that more attention needs to be given to the responsibilities of taking care of our children, both before, during, and after our assemblies here at Knollwood. We had an episode that happened a couple of months ago, within the past couple of months, that brings the matter of safety to our mind. The elders have asked the parents to watch over their children before and after services, especially that they not be allowed to run inside or outside of the building. A child was struck by a car in the parking lot just within the past couple of months. No lasting harm was done, but it was a very sobering reminder and warning that we need to be careful when we're driving in the parking lot. But also a reminder to the parents of young children that their children need to be kept by them and under control in such situations. Some children have been seen playing out in front of the church building close to the road. That's a dangerous place for them to be. They don't need to be out there. Children should not be allowed to run in the building before or after worship services. And I know that there's no parent here that winds their kid up and says, "Go for it." But, you know, when we ask our children to sit still for a couple of hours, they're only going to get restless. And when there's a lot of children, they want to run, they want to play. And I know that we do the best that we can as parents to get on our children and tell them not to run in the building, not to run. But brethren, I want to encourage you, don't give up on that. Keep reinforcing that. Keep telling that to your youngsters. Because we've seen on numerous occasions our young ones literally run through older people trying to get to one end of the building or another. And to have an old person here fall and to break something, break a hip, break an arm, would be just as sad and just as disastrous as one of our young ones being hit by a car out in the parking lot. And we all know the challenges that go with this. But we are simply reminding, I'm simply reminding the parents of the younger children to continue to tell your children not to run and do what you can to keep them from doing so. There are parents here who do that. We've seen children after services. Like I said, if you stay around long after services, it's not uncommon for one, two, three, four kids to be up on the front pew crying because they got in trouble for running. So we know that's being addressed. We simply want to encourage you to continue to do that. Not only is it a matter of safety, but the elders have already a couple of times gotten up and talked about property damage, talked about songbooks that have been torn up, a bathroom that has been messed up. Did the young kids do that? Not necessarily. As you leave the building going out into the parking lot, you'll look at the lattice work there. A lot of that is bented up. It's out of shape. Now, am I looking at one person in particular? No. The elders have talked about we need to respect this property. This property represents the Lord's money. And we need to respect that. We need to teach our children to respect that as well. But not only is it a matter of safety, not only is it a matter of damaging the property, but it's also a matter of staying in the theme of what we're looking at here with reverence in our worship services. The noise that is made by some of our children in our services can be distracting. Children need to be taught and expected to sit silently during worship services. Now, those of you that might be tended to chuckle at that, and say that that's unrealistic, there's three or four generations that are right here that will say that's exactly what we did. That's exactly what was done with me when I was young, and that's exactly what I did with my children when they were young. Children can be expected to sit quietly during worship services. Now, sometimes our little ones don't feel good. Now, I understand that. They're hungry. They're tired, they need to be changed, they're cutting their teeth, whatever it might be. Those things happen. You know what? There's a room right there in the back to take care of things like that. And no one's going to think anything of a mother or a father taking their youngster back there to take care of those needs, getting them taken care of. No one's going to think a thing in the world of that. But sometimes youngsters, sometimes our little kids are fighting with mom and dad. Mom and dad have told them to do something, and they don't want to do it, and they're fighting with their mom and dad. They want to get down. They want to walk around. Or they want to cry and throw a fit because they're not getting their way. I want to tell you, it's not uncommon for little children somewhere along the line to test the limits of their parents, to test the authority of their parents, to test the lines that the parents have drawn. I want to tell you, mom and dad, when that time comes, you cannot fail that test. When your children are testing you, you've told them not to do something, and they go ahead and do it anyway, you can't afford to fail that test. The Bible tells us, he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. Chasten your son while there is hope, and do not set your heart on his destruction. When your children are being loud and you've told them to be quiet and they've become louder, it's a time for you to discipline. Connie Adams, Brother Connie Adams, he still does, I'm sure. I've heard him say it at least once, if not more times, in his preaching. The way it was done when he was younger, when he was raising his children, if your children needed it, you take them out, you wear them out, and you bring them back in. And that's the way that they were taught. Now, that's a little harsh for some people to listen to today. In our politically correct culture, that's a little bit harsh. So let me put it another way. I got some no's that's not harsh, but let me put it another way. I talked with Abby Blackaby a couple weeks ago as I was putting these thoughts together. And she shared something with me and gave me her permission to share it with you. When they were struggling some time back, she went to Louise Sellers and asked Louise for some help and some advice. And the answer, the help that she got, was that it was best for Jason. When these episodes came up, it was best for the father to take the child out, discipline the child, calm the child down, and then bring them right back in. And to be consistent with that. It's a training process. It's a teaching process. And I want to tell you, you young parents, you are in the midst of a very understanding and sympathetic assembly. Because many of us have been there before. We're rooting for you. We're on your side. But be consistent. Do it and be consistent with it. And that time of training, it will only last a little while. And then you'll bear the fruits of that. you'll bear the fruits of it. Now, I know some children are easy to train, and some are very, very stubborn. I know. I know all about that. Keep at it. Keep at it. Don't give up. Don't fail the test. Keep at it. Here's the thing, talking about our children, before, during, and after our assemblies. Our children may not fully understand and appreciate what's being done here at the building. They might not understand and appreciate exactly what's happening during our worship services, but they can be taught that it is important and that they need to be respectful. They can be taught that. And as parents, we need to be teaching them that, because if they don't get it when they're little, when are they going to get it? They might not ever get it. And that'd be a true tragedy, wouldn't it? That would really be something worth crying over. So let's be consistent. It's a responsibility. Parents have responsibilities. I want to encourage the parents here to live up to those responsibilities. And like one young couple has done, and perhaps others that I'm not aware of, get some advice from others. Talk to others and get some help and get some advice, because we love one another and we want what is best for these young children. Thank you so much for your kind attention to the things that I've wanted to share with you today. Remember, we're talking about trends, and trends indicate developments or changes. And when these developments are good, there's a reason for us to rejoice. And when they're not so good, it simply means we have work to do. That's all it means, is that we have work to do. I want to say a couple more things. Now, I want you to listen and hear me very, very carefully. Then we'll extend the invitation and the sermon will be yours. Every member of this congregation is important. Every member is important. Every one of us in different stages in our lives bring the things to Knollwood that makes it what it is today. And we're thankful for that. I'm thankful for that. There are no ulterior motives in this sermon that I have preached. I'm not trying to make somebody happy. I'm not trying to upset somebody. No one has been singled out here, although it may seem like it. Trust me, no one has been singled out with this sermon. As best as I can, I'm trying to speak the truth in love. I am glad to be a member of the Knollwood Church of Christ. I am glad to be here, and I want it to be the best congregation that it can be. That starts with me being the best member that I can be. And I hope you understand that it means you being the best member that you can be too. Brethren, let's do our best in everything that we do. If you're not here, if you're here and you're not yet a Christian, not yet a child of God, you need to become one. You need to confess your faith in Jesus, that you believe He's the Son of God, repent of your sins, and allow us to baptize you for the forgiveness of those sins. If you've done that in the past, but you've become casual in your attitude towards God, and it's shown in different areas of your life, you need to repent. You need to come back unto God. If you need to take care of that in a public way, we'd be glad to help you. If you need our prayers, we'd be glad to pray with you. Whatever your need is, we invite you to let it be made known by coming forward as together we stand and sing this song.